I give a shout out to at Old Trapper King on Instagram, OLDTRAFFORDKING. Some time ago, Andrew, he DM'd us at Family Matters Rewatch Pod. He sent us a clip from a much later Family Matters episode. Do you remember the episode where Carl unsuccessfully attempted to get a $20,000 bank loan so that he could put Laura into Harvard?
No, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that episode either. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely later Family Matters because we have Carl with a shaved head. He's wearing the white police uniform shirts instead of the blue ones that we see earlier. And yeah, no, I just thought it was a really great clip that I think I have to try to share to your Instagram at AJ Vanderton. Very relatable, of course, if you're a parent of a soon-to-be college kid, because we're recording this, late February. I think right around now is usually when the high school seniors are like sending out their essays and applications and trying to get accepted to the 2024-25 school year, right?
The Hunger Games have started. They have started. The Hunger Games are here, and it's college prep time. Can we just talk about the fact that $20,000 is what it cost to go to Harvard back then? And now it's like crazy amounts of money.
Honestly, it might have still been very expensive, and maybe Carl just needed that amount of money to maybe pay for a portion of the tuition, because I remember the clip that he shared, Old Trapper King, he did mention that, what did he mention? Like, there was something in the clip that said, oh yeah, that Carl makes a lot of money as a police officer, so thus, because of that kind of went part into, like, that kind of led into him not being qualified for this kind of financial aid. So I think maybe it's like $20,000 out of his $60,000 tuition that Carl was trying to get aid for.
Which is still super cheap. I am happy to hear that.
I think $20,000 around that area was what it cost for my second college that I transferred to, because I transferred from University of the Arts in Philadelphia, which was a fairly private, like, performing arts kind of thing, where it was like $40,000 a year. And then I transferred to a state school in my home state of Connecticut where, like, yeah, I think maybe like 15, 20 grand, maybe if you didn't count room and board, like it. And I think I had like, 12 grand in loans left to pay off, which is not that bad. So I can only imagine what the Harvard graduates are going through right now when they're paying off their debt.
I can't even imagine. I already paid off one set of student loans. This time going back to school, I'm literally paying for it out of pocket. I'm like, no more loans.
Did you go to a private, a public university? Where did you go?
So I went to a public university when I first started out, and it was great. It was a fun time. And then I switched to community college because I was like, well, I'm just here partying and having fun. I'm not taking this seriously, so it doesn't really matter. And then I paid off my loans, but I had like 15K in loans. And the day I finished that last payment, when I tell you, I just cried because I was so happy. The worst decision of my life to get student loans. I hated it.
Yeah, it's a process. It's a process. And you're either going to be, you know, a Harvard-like person where it's going to take you like 30 years to pay off your loan, or maybe you're in a situation like you and I where you went to school cost a lot less, and maybe it might take like 2 to 3 to 4 or 5 years. Thank you again, Old Trapper King on Instagram. I mean, it's relatable to any parent who has to, you know, eventually deal with a kid going to college and racking up that debt. And, you know, even if you don't have a kid going to college, just in general, just becoming a financially independent adult in these inflated times. Like, what a time we're living in.
Yes. And prices are never going to go back down at this point. They've seen that people are willing to pay it, so they are not changing these prices.
Don't be so cynical for me, Andrew. Let's go back to the days. Let's go back to the days of 98 cents a gallon for gas.
Oh, I wish. Take me back to those days where I can just, well, minus the racism, but take me back to those days where gas was cheap.
Anytime I look at like old 30s, 40s, 50s footage, it's like, oh man, everything was so cheap at the time. The dollar was better in the U.S., but I had no human rights as a Black person. So let's have that in place, and then I'll go back to the 30s with you guys.
Right. Let's get the golden years without the racism. Let's just like get that completely out. And I'm fine with going back to just gas being 98 cents a gallon and no more cell phones. It will make it work.
There you go. Oh, my God. I got to give a shout out to listeners like Mike Hammer. I recently saw that he subscribed to our YouTube channel at Family Matters Rewatch Pod. So definitely subscribe if you want to see our content there. We have all the full episodes. We have a bunch of shorts. So thank you, Mike. Thank you. And welcome. Speaking of which, to the Delicious Recap, it's our weekly recap of the 90s sitcom Family Matters. I am normally John Francois, but you are what this week?
This week, I am going to be Mickey.
Mickey. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Andrea J. Vanderton, a.k.a. Mickey the Dog.
I will be Mickey the Dog this episode.
Yeah. I was thinking about you while I was watching and noting this episode last night. I was like, you know what? Andrew probably had a lot of moments with this guy.
That dog was so precious. It was a precious little dog. It was cute. Now, you know, I will wait till we get into the episode because I have some commentary for this episode that I feel like is the complete opposite of all my warm and mushy feelings seeing this dog.
Interesting. Okay, I'm very curious to hear that. We're talking about season one, episode 13, Man's Best Friend. Original air date, January 5th, 1990. As we explained at the end of last episode, the Family Writers staff, they came back from the holiday break. And they're ready to go for the new year. They're ready to go for a new decade. Here we are. We always call this a 90s sitcom, and now it's officially true. The episode was written by Robert Blair, the lovely Rich Corral, back for a second episode in a row. Our only guest star, of course, eventual big star of the show, Jaleel White, plays, as you know, Steve Urkel. Hulu synopsis, the children bring home a stray dog that has a habit of chewing on things, and that leads Carl to change his mind about pets. Now, I should note, Andrew, a little bit before we recorded, @JudyWinslowMatters on Instagram sent me a message and just happened to say that this was Jamie Foxworth's favorite episode.
I can see why. I can see why, with how she acted in this episode, why this might be her favorite episode, because it seemed like she was having a good time.
There were some funny Judy moments, I will say that. There's one that particularly sticks out to my mind that we'll get to later on. But yeah, please let me know. What did you think about this episode?
You know what? This episode was good. It was a fun episode. It was a lighter episode, which was nice to have. I have to say, for this episode, it's another one of those ones where I feel like it flew. Like, it was over before I knew it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this doesn't feel like that original Family Matters feel where it was more fleshed out, or maybe not fleshed out. I would say maybe more longer scenes with individuals. And this kind of the pacing was different and I liked it.
Yeah, I have to agree on the pace. It is certainly, again, a credit to Rich Corral. I think once he got on, he just changed the momentum of the show. So I watched and noted it last night. And even though I felt like episode 12 went by, you know what? Hard to say. No, episode 12 and 13, I think both, while I was watching and noting it, collectively, I can say, wow, that didn't feel as laborious as I thought, you know, to really dive into this episode and take notes. I noticed again, no Mama Winslow. What's going on? What is Rosetta having a personal life issue? Is her health bad? Why is she not appearing in two episodes in a row?
I know. I noticed. I was like, she's not in this episode. I don't know what Mama Winslow's got going on. Maybe she was just I'm going to party with the girls in France or something. Because she is not in this episode. She's not even mentioned in this episode.
Yeah, very odd. Because, you know, especially with these big family moments that happen in this episode, it's like, well, Mama Winslow's part of the family. She lives in the house, last I checked. So, you know, and again, I think we had mentioned that Steve and Estelle, they have a sort of playful, close-ish relationship. So get Mama Winslow in there. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We want to know where she is. Where is she at?
And as for Urkel's presence, of course, this is the second official episode where we know, all right, Steve is a part of the family. And it's interesting. Did you find that there was a contrast between his splashy debut and a more muted presence in this episode? He just sort of sparingly appeared here and there.
Yes, it was weird. I felt like we were just watching random cold openings every time he was on screen, because it's like, this doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. I don't know anybody who meets somebody one day and then that person can walk in their house the next day without even knocking on the door. So it was very weird.
Oh yeah, Steve Urkel coming in, just unsolicited, and the Winslows don't get the point. Lock your door.
Mm-hmm. Lock it. You live in Chicago. Lock your door.
Right, of all places. And let me talk about Carl. So he had a very small smidge of unlikability, but I will have to say, for the majority of this episode, he was a fucking superhero to me. The way he treated Mickey, it was like, this is an example of the person that you want to give a dog to.
Yes. until we learn a little bit more. Yes. But Carl in this episode, for me, interesting wardrobe choices. I do want to talk a little bit about that. Very interesting wardrobe choices. But Carl, for me, in this episode was likable and at the same time intolerable when we first meet Mickey.
Yeah. So I agree on that part. Like when I say unlikability, like the smitch part, like that part. But as he gets more used to Mickey, that's where I'm saying like, okay, I'm liking Carl here. Carl, I'm on Carl's side. Now, as for the rest of the family, I'm going to just give you a warning, Andrew, before we get into a deep dive. Like as the owner of four dogs with a wife who is a vet tech, I'm probably going to get too much into my feelings about how much I detest how the rest of this family end up treating this dog. Because it's basically the reverse of Carl. Like with Carl, it's like, oh, wow, Carl, damn the way you're treating Mickey. And then Carl becomes like, oh, wow, I love the way you're treating Mickey. But then the rest of the family, it's like, oh my God, the rest of the family loves Mickey. But then later on, the way that poor guy is treated by the family, I'm going to have a lot of hatred. So be warned.
Okay, I'm excited to hear.
They're the prime example of people I think you should not give dogs to. I will just say that. They remind me of the pandemic dog owners.
I get that. I can agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into it. Cold open. We open in the living room. Eddie is kneeling down on the center table in front of the center couch, putting together, what is it, like some Pirates of the Caribbean-ish ship? It was a pretty big thing that he was trying to assemble.
He is building the Amistad. That is what is on that table. I was like, this looks like a very Amistad-ish ship that he's putting together.
No idea what you're talking about. So is that like some kind of Greek ship from like some Moby Dick-like book?
So the Amistad was a slave ship. it was a slave ship. And it's a great movie. If you've never seen Amistad, check it out. It is one of those movies I will call delicious, but it is a heavy watch. It is hard because it's about slavery. But the Amistad is what that ship looks like that he's building. And if you Google the Amistad, look at it, you'll look at that ship that Eddie's working on. And it's like, ooh, this is eerily similar.
So two things. One, is it 12 years of slave intents? And two, damn me for not knowing about my ancestors in this way.
I have not watched 12 Years a Slave, and I refuse to watch it because I don't like to watch Black people in slavery. I don't want to see us enslaved anymore, and I don't want to keep seeing sad narratives about Black people. So I've never seen 12 Years a Slave, but I have heard it is hard to watch. And Amistad is like the early version of that because, you know, like special effects and stuff weren't as good when that movie was made. It was made, I want to say, like late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. But it is one of those gritty slave narratives, and if you watch it, I just say just be prepared for a heavy moment and maybe have like a Disney TV show ready to watch after you watch that.
Okay. Amistad, I have it on my watch list. I got your cue for that. Okay. So he's putting together this Amistad ship, we're not going to call it, Eddie Winslow, and he's got the glue in various pieces. He's got long papers of instructions behind him laying on the couch, as if putting together this ship is as difficult as Carl putting together the shower for Mama Winslow. Like, I was like, wow, like those, did you see how thick those instructions were? I couldn't imagine that it would be that difficult. It seemed like it would be something more finger-sized in terms of instruction manuals.
You would think, but then this threw me for a loop in the beginning. I'm like, Eddie's building a ship? Like, how many hobbies does this man have?
This is true. What was the other hobbies that he had in past episodes? I don't remember.
He's got basketball, he's got his music, his dates with girls. Yep. Like, Eddie's a busy social butterfly. So to see him working on a ship, I'm like, oh, okay, this is different.
You know why? Because he's dumb and he realized that, God, it sucks to be dumb. Let me occupy my time with a lot of hobbies, a lot of things that will increase the intelligence in my brain.
I can see that. He's working mentally to get it working. I'm happy it wasn't a ship in a bottle. I feel like that would have been worse.
Oh, yeah. And Eddie's dark green faded sweater with the various random dark blue rectangles on it. Did you pick up on that?
It was an interesting sweater. He's got a couple of interesting outfit choices in this episode, too.
Yeah. Please tell me more, because I think you and I might match up on one choice that he had later on. And I think that, like, there was a point in his sweater where I thought I saw fish trying to swim downwards.
That's what it looked like to me. I paused my screen so many times. I'm like, what is going on in the sweater? And it looks like fish swimming under the waves, which makes me think like the little blocks and stuff on his shirt are supposed to be like the motion of the ocean. But maybe. I was so confused on it. It's a confusing sweater.
It really is. So we enter Steve Urkel, of course, from the front door with his very boring poop up, pelvis stick out, early walking posture. This is going to be a thing kind of throughout this episode, is that Steve hasn't quite found his walk yet. I think I'd like to describe his walk as, it's like a depressed Eeyore turtle kind of walk. It's not where it needs to be.
Right now we have Steve in puberty. He hasn't become Urkel yet because he's going through puberty. So he's still Steve. He's still trying to figure some things out, because even the delivery of one of his most iconic lines, I was like, oh, okay. I see what they're going for here. I didn't like laugh like, oh my God, that's Steve Urkel.
Yeah. And Rich Corral, I remember he said that when he first said, did I do that for the first time, that the audience had a big reaction. But I was sitting there thinking during the interview, like, I don't know. I mean, it was okay. I don't know if it was like, oh my God, that's the funniest line ever.
It was pretty muted, unless we only heard the final edit and maybe it was louder in studio at the time.
Possibly. We do have a habit of Family Matters editors taking out probably what's better content in favor of whatever they chose to be the final cut. So we have a girl, and I also noticed we have an Urkel cold opening finally. That makes sense. We don't have to like look at an episode 4 cold open and be like, oh, what is this kid? He hasn't been introduced formally yet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a weird cold opening. It's still very weird to me, because I'm just like, we just met him last episode. Why is he walking in your house without knocking on the door? Like, this is still so weird to me.
This is true. This is a good point. Urkel greets Eddie, and Eddie asks, why doesn't he ever knock? Steve says, if he did, nobody would ever let him in. Oh, God. The adorable trespasser that he is.
The adorable trespasser who's going through a little bit of trauma. People won't let him in the house, but he has not addressed that yet.
Yeah. I want to give you a restraining order, but gosh darn it, I also want to give you a hug.
You're so lovable. You can't be violent.
Yet. You can't be violent yet. Steve then asks where Laura is, and Eddie tells him she's upstairs, which is a bad idea, Eddie, but okay, I guess we're going to go with that.
Eddie just spilled the tea. He is not a good brother when it comes to Laura and Steve.
You know, he's so absorbed in Amistad ship knowledge that protecting his sister seems to be a second priority right now.
It does. Like, he's like, I'm focusing on the ship. She's upstairs. Leave me alone.
Steve boasts to Eddie that he's going to ask Laura out for Saturday night. And then I automatically thought, because Steve is like, what, fucking 12 or 13 during this time, probably going to have to ask his parents, Herb and Diane, out for a ride to wherever they're going to be going, because you're a preteen. Like, you're fairly limited on what you could do when you go out. Like, what are they gonna do? I guess be dropped off by the adults at the roller skating rink?
Probably, maybe the roller skating rink or the little kids club that they were at. What was it? Leroy's. Maybe they're going to Leroy's for some like French fries and cheese or something.
There you go. And you know what? It's a fast food restaurant, but the fact that they put Bobby Brown at like a 100 level volume, you could arguably say it's a little kids club as well.
Yeah. It's like a kids hangout spot. Like, this is the kids club. Adults are welcome, but you're going to be surrounded by preteens here.
Mm-hmm. Eddie tells Steve to not waste his time because Laura is never going to go out with him. And I immediately thought, just give it about 9 years, Eddie. You might be wrong.
It's after Laura eliminates Judy. Boom.
Don't remind me. Laura comes downstairs. She has a sort of 40s Bobby Soxer look with like the dark blue sweater and the black skirt with, I think, sneakers. She's got like a noticeably different and more dressed up hairdo. I literally looked at Laura's fashion in this moment and I'm like, wow, you look like somebody that had a big crush on Frank Sinatra back in like 1942 at the Paramount Theater in New York. Like, it was a very, you know what I'm talking about when I say the Bobby Soxer look?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. She gives that 100%, and that's me tapping into what I believe is her church girl style. She's like, I'm a church girl. You need to know that I'm modest, but I'll still come out and be fashionable.
Yeah, and she did actually have that same kind of fashion in the quilt episode when she was trying to, you know, find Mama Winslow's quilt. So Laura is going through some experimentation. And once Steve notices Laura and says hi, Laura quickly turns around and to run for it upstairs. Steve playfully cries out to Laura, "I saw you." Laura feels the need to come back down as if the other option is Steve physically abusing her. Like, I just found that really interesting. I was like, you know, you could probably go back upstairs and Steve would be okay.
Yeah, you can just go back upstairs, Laura, and just hang out in your room, because that's weird. That is weird. I would have been like, get him out of this house.
Steve, in a delightfully nerdy, elegant way, tells Laura he was wondering if he could share the pleasure of her company Saturday night. And darn, you know, if he wasn't the guy that couldn't understand that no is it no, like, I would say that's a very gentlemanly way to ask a lady out on a Saturday night.
Yeah, it was a very nice invitation, but Steve just doesn't understand boundaries just yet. And I think once he gets his boundaries knowledge, maybe he'll understand that a no is a no.
Have we watched the same show? Does he ever have a understanding of boundaries?
At some point, you know, he gets it once Myra gets in the picture. Myra sets him straight.
Okay. You know what? I maybe my memory's fogged. I will have to look deeper into the Myra episodes. Okay, that's very interesting. Laura claims she's busy Saturday night and does not hesitate to walk past Steve towards the kitchen, I believe. As Steve follows Laura, he asks, "How about Sunday night?" Laura insists to Steve that she'll put this to him as nicely as she can. She's not going out with him. She's never going out with him. He makes her skin crawl. And then Steve, of course, does not get the point and says he understands that he caught Laura at a bad time. And Laura just gives up and exits to the kitchen. And I think as, like, the more that we see this Steve-Laura dynamic, I'm going to have, like, the same opinion, which is that there are nicer ways Laura can be honest with him. And if that doesn't do, then just find a way to get a restraining order on the guy. I mean, your dad's a cop. Maybe use that influence.
She could, unfortunately, and I feel so bad for Laura. Laura's going to try so hard, but Steve is just oblivious. And he's a stalker, which can be flattering to some people, but not in this case.
I mean, to you, I feel like that would be a nice toxic red flag that would turn you on in the bedroom for an adult guy. But outside of that, in the normal world, you'd probably be like, ooh, yeah, let me call the popo.
Yeah, I'm like, get away from me. Like, why were you in my bushes and why were you watching me watch true crime? Like, that is weird. Like, it's weird.
Steve walks over to Eddie and brags that Laura wants him bad, as Eddie nods like he clearly is not paying attention in favor of working on his ship. Steve says, "See ya," to Eddie. And as he's on his way out, he trips badly over Eddie's ship project and literally ruins the entire thing as it audibly crashes to the ground. Eddie, who I noticed was holding a phallic-shaped ship piece. What do you call that? Do you call that like the antenna on the ship?
I think it's the mast. I think it's what that is. That where the sheets hang and the wind blows? Is that the mast? I'm going to go with the mast.
I don't know. I always see some like kind of stick thing that always sticks out of like an Amistad-like ship. And I just figure like, oh, okay. There's the pencil penis that just that guides the ship signal. I don't know.
It's something. I think it holds the sails, I think. But I mean, I'm not nautical, so I don't know for sure.
Me neither. You and I need to get our nautical knowledge going on at some point. So Eddie, he has open mouth, speechless shock on his face. And Steve has the same expression, too, as he realizes what he just did. We get a camera back and forth for a second of both of their shocked reactions as the audience is clearly enjoying the moment. We get a shot of the ruined ship pieces. And then camera cuts back to Steve as he points to what he ruined on the ground and says something that I saw coming from a mile away. What is going to be his iconic catchphrase? Did I do that? And then as Eddie slowly stands up ready to kill Steve, he makes a run for the front door. Eddie chases him out as upbeat music closes out this cold open, which I found to be decently paced. I thought it was concise. I thought it was a fairly amusing cold open. It still kind of sets us up for what we're getting with Urkel. But you found it to be weird.
I just found it to be weird. I was like, I just still don't understand. We have never gotten a, like, other than, hi, I'm Steve Urkel, introduction to Steve. So what happened after the dance that made Steve feel so comfortable to keep coming back to the Winslow's house?
What happened?
Like, did he hang out there and eat cheese until 10 p.m. and then they found, like, oh, he's actually pretty tolerable? Like, what happened?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because had Laura gone to the dance with Steve in the last episode, then you could kind of understand, like, okay, you know, maybe got to know Laura more, went home with Laura after the dance and just became more reluctantly acquainted with the family on their side. They obviously don't like it. But, you know, Laura went with Mark Newhouse and is trying at all costs to avoid Steve. Carl doesn't like Steve. The rest of the family doesn't really think much of him. So the fact that this episode, he just comes in like he has this familial bond with the Winslows. He's a psychopath. I think that's the conclusion that we can put here. I think it's intentional. The writers are just like, you know what? Yeah, it may seem confusing to you how this character is just in the Winslow world, but he's obviously coming in without consent. And we as the audience just have to accept it. Like, this is the neighbor that the Winslows just have to put up with.
Yeah, the Herb and Diane are not good parents from what I'm picking up. And I appreciate Steve being here. I kind of think about it now that you say it. I think like maybe Steve is just one of those neighborhood kids where his parents are like, get out. We do not want you in here. And he found a family to latch on to. And he's like, oh, I've got my connection now. And so he's just taking advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. So we go into scene one, exterior day shot of Winslow House. We cut to the kitchen as we see Laura and Judy excitedly enter from the back porch door as they greet their mom and Aunt Rachel with their colorful Mr. Rogers sweaters. Did you notice that?
They were very colorful, and somebody had rhombuses. Maybe somebody had rhombuses on their sweaters because they were different colors. And I think maybe it was Judy.
It could have been. Speaking of which, okay, so Eddie follows behind Laura and Judy in this moment. And I also think that Judy got the first line in this scene where it's like, oh, hi, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think she got her moment.
She did. Judy got her moment. She came into that scene talking. She got her moment.
Yeah. I thought that what I saw on Judy's sweater was either like bears or elephants. I got some kind of animal. I didn't see any trace of rhombus.
I got to look at it again. Maybe it was something different. But when I was looking, I was like, are those rhombuses? Like, I couldn't make out what it was clearly. But I know on a sweater, there were these weird shapes with colors inside of the shapes. And I'm like, what am I looking at right now?
Well, as the child of Harriet, the rhombus ancestry has to be passed on. So I think it would be appropriate for Miss Judy Winslow to be a rhombus enthusiast as well. Laura exclaims to Harriet and Rachel that they have a surprise for them and they're going to love it. Eddie happily agrees and says it's something they cannot live without. Harriet says she hopes it's a maid. Again, Harriet giving me that relatable, tired adult energy. Oh my God, I've worked a 12-hour shift. I do not feel like doing the dishes. Where's a maid who I can pay like $100 to do it for me?
I don't blame her. And that dry pot roast that she was basting tells me that she wants a maid. That pot roast was so dry. It looked gross.
I didn't pick up on that. I just thought like, because I think that this is first of all, I thought it was a turkey that Harriet was eventually setting on the kitchen table. But how could you tell it was a dry pot roast?
And so I had to go back and pause it and literally look at what was in this dish that she's spooning something over. And it is a pot roast, and it is the driest looking pot roast I've ever seen. There's carrots and potatoes in the pan with it as well. And nothing looks moist. It all looks so dry. And then when she basted it, I'm like, what did she just baste that with? It's dry again.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the prop department didn't pay attention to the authenticity that is Black homemade cooking. Because obviously, we Black people, we're all about the seasoning, the sauces, the spice. Like, we're not white people who's like, oh yeah, give me like a dry potato and then I'll be good for the day. Like, we're not that people. So I think the prop department was just lazy and just wanted to get some food for Harriet to bring out to the table. And they just chose, I guess, a fake sort of Barbie pot roast thing from a toy store and just went with that.
That's literally what it looks like. Cause like, I watched the scene a couple of times just so I make sure I was like not losing it watching this pot roast. Cause it captivated me when I first saw her pick up the spoon and baste it, but there was no liquid on the spoon. So I'm like, okay, what is going on here? What is Harriet doing right now? And so then I'm like determining, I'm like, okay, the kids are getting home from school, the table's set with all the places, so she's preparing dinner, but this dinner looks cold and dry and does not look good. And then there's a pot of carrots that are on the counter, and these carrots look like little brown hot dogs, but they're carrots. And it's the weirdest freaking setup. Give us our sandwiches back. Give us our bland sandwiches. I would rather have that than this dry pot roast.
Yeah, thankfully, the kids present good news that contrasts this very awful dinner that we're about to eat here. And Harriet also, I noticed like her, she was wearing like a very blue or a very green striped polo shirt dress thing. Was it a polo shirt? Was it a polo dress? What was it?
It was like a polo sweater dress combination. The dress looked like it was made of velour. So that was almost my first question there. Like, is it comfortable? But this was like Harriet's version of a velour tracksuit. Like, it was cute, but I was like, okay, this is different.
All right, all right. Rachel says that in response to Harriet hoping that, you know, the children have brought a maid, Rachel says that she hopes the children the children have brought her a man. I don't know how many times I have to repeat it. Rachel, you had Alan in episode 4.
Right, Rachel, you had a man, but you lost him. So now you're out here looking for men in these streets and it's not going to work out.
Yeah, you had fucking almost toxic police officer abuser Buddy Goodrich from a few episodes ago. You had so many opportunities.
You did, and you just let it go, girl. Mm.
And Eddie tells Rachel and Harriet to close their eyes, and they agree. Eddie opens the back porch door. Laura goes out to get the surprise, which is a conventionally adorable furry dog on a leash. The studio audience, of course, they audibly aww at this dog. And this is where I wish I had my wife, Tony, here, because I've told you that she's a veterinary tech. And literally a big defining part of our relationship these past 4 years is anytime someone else's dog passes by, I ask Tony, hey, what's the breed? Give me the breed. And she can almost always tell me what the breed is. Do you know what the breed of this dog is? Because I felt like maybe German Shepherd vibes.
I didn't get German Shepherd. I've had German Shepherds. That's the only type of dog we've had ever growing up was a German Shepherd. So I'm very familiar with how they look. And I didn't get German Shepherd from this dog. I have no idea what breed of dog that is. And it's a very interesting looking dog.
Yeah, a dog that needs to be groomed because that dog is furry as fuck.
Yeah, that dog was shaggy. And I was like, what is this breed? I have no idea.
Yeah, the shaggy dog. I think that's like a Tim Allen movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Oh my gosh, I haven't seen that in forever. Yes, it is. It's a good movie too.
Shameless random plug to the shaggy dog. Go see it wherever you can find your bootleg service. All right. Eddie instructs Harriet and Rachel to open their eyes. And when they do, we get a shot of the dog's face as Harriet exclaims, it's a dog. And I was like, no shit, Sherlock. It's not a lizard. But, you know, as Harriet is looking stunned in a maybe not so very good way, Rachel, she's like in sync with my mind when she sarcastically says to Harriet, good, you got that right on the first try.
I loved both of their reactions at this moment because Rachel, she kind of is giving that vibe of, yeah, Harriet's a dog. Can we keep it? And Harriet's kind of like, it's a dog. Get it out.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We get to that moment. So Judy to her mom, she's kneeled down with the dog. Isn't it cute, mom? Harriet buys into it as she lovingly says he's adorable and a sweet little dog, but cuts to the chase and instructs her children to get him out of here. And my mom, in the days when she did not have the family dog that she currently has with my siblings. Maybe this was because she came from Haiti and they were used to like having all the animals outside their house. But if we had brought a dog unsolicitingly to the house, she just would have been like, what the hell is this animal? You brought it to my house to pee on my carpet. Get it the fuck out right now. Like she would do that.
I can see that. That's the black mom thing. My mom would do the same thing. She would have been like, get that thing out of here right now. My dad brought home random dogs and she would be like, why is this dog here? What did you bring this dog home for? Get it out.
So it sounds like we had the same parental dynamic because my dad was the one who loved pets. He was like, oh my God, a ferret, a rodent, a dog. Like, I think my dad currently lives in Haiti where he's also from. He has a dog named Sean, who I think still lives with him. So yeah, I mean, I remember just, you know, kind of exchanging a picture of my dog Buddy with his dog Sean. And so yeah, of the two, my dad was the one that was like, yeah, bring pets in.
Mm-hmm. My mom, she's, don't bring that dog in here. She's like, I don't want a dog in the house. Even after my dad got a most recent dog, my mom was like, no, he can never be in the house. And then what happened? She had him in the house.
There you go. Because, you know, the more you get used to the presence of the animal and the love that they provide, the more that you basically equate them to a human child, which is fine.
Mm-hmm. It is. They're our pet children.
Laura says that the dog has nowhere to go and has been hanging around school for almost a week with no tag or license. And look, I got the stray dog part and the part about not having a tag, but I didn't get the part about the license. A dog carrying a license? Like, what does that mean? Like rabies paperwork on their paws?
I had to Google it. Now, I've seen that there are licensing tags for certain dogs where, you know, if you have to register your dog, like at least here in New York State, you have to register your dog and have a license for your dog. Then you can get a metal tag with the license information on it for your dog's collar. So I was thinking maybe that's what she's indicating.
Okay. All right. I believe that. And Eddie says they tried to find the owner. They called Pet Finders. They put up flyers, but nobody claimed him. And then side note, I looked up Pet Finders online and there is actually a company called Pet Finder, all one word, but with no S at the end, but it was launched in 1996. So I wondered if prior to that, there was actually a Pet Finders hotline that you could call.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, putting up the flyers and stuff, at some point, somebody had to be like, okay, we've got to have like a service to help these people out. So it wouldn't surprise me.
And Judy asks in childlike pleading way, can we keep him, please? We're going to get a lot of Judy doing that. And maybe that's why Jamie liked it. Maybe she just thought that this was the best of what Judy had to offer. Like she just had a way to charm you and kind of make you laugh at the same time.
Yeah. And she was the focal point of convincing them to keep this dog. I don't think if Judy was there, they wouldn't have been swayed to keep the dog.
And the audience has a mixture of awes with laughs. I mean, it's the youngest child. So, of course, Judy, they're going to buy into that. And then Harriet, though, not buying the performance, she tells Judy to just cut whining because she knows her father's rule, which is no animals in the house unless they're in a bowl, a cage, or in a roasting pan. And I just feel the need to apologize to you, Andrew, because I know that you're vegan and you probably were just like, oh, or maybe you weren't. Maybe you just took it lightly. I don't know.
I took it lightly because I'm just like, oh, okay, understandable. A good old Black family rule. I understand that. But I don't agree with you. No canned animals should ever be put in a pot, ever.
And then we have Harriet bringing what I think is a, well, at the time, I thought it was a cooked turkey, but you confirmed that it was a dry ass pot roast. So we'll call it a dry ass pot roast that Harriet is bringing to the kitchen table. Laura asks if the dog could be a special case that they keep. Rachel is totally for this dog. She tries to encourage Harriet too. Harriet tells Rachel she's not helping. Rachel says to think of the fun that little Richie could be having with that cute little puppy. And then Rachel proceeds to baby talk to the dog as she would her own child. You see the doggy, nice doggy. And yes, it looks like a full-grown dog, but from what I've learned being a dog owner over the course of a few years, it's always kind of an interesting thing to see like a big-ass dog that's puppy age, that's like 5 or 6 or 7 months or 1 year old or whatever. Like case in point, one of my dogs, Dexter, he is a blind bull mastiff. I think he was, God, he must have been like less than 20 or 10 pounds when we got him back in May of 2023. And right now, in February 2024, as we're recording this, the guy is almost 100 pounds.
Oh my gosh, he has grown.
Yeah, he's become bigger than the other dogs that have just sort of stayed the same throughout the course of the last few months. But hey, I mean, Dexter, he's still got his balls. He's a puppy. My wife is, just waiting patiently for the time where she could take him to work and snip those balls off. But I think they're adorable.
I mean, for what it sounds like, a 100-pound bull mastiff, and you said he's blind?
Yeah.
With balls, I would feel like, oh my gosh, this dog, I don't know what to do. Like, we got to get these balls out here so he doesn't start marking everywhere.
You know what? Yes, we do. I know it's good for his health. But man, when I look at those balls and the way they just like kind of squeeze out of his butt as he's like laying down. Oh my God. It's like cute little dice that I want to shake.
You got to ask them. Maybe they can make him a prosthetic so you can just have him wear that. And then it'll still look like he has balls.
All right. Fine. I may consider that. Harriet apologizes and again insists that Carl will not allow a dog in the house and they'll just have to take the dog to an animal shelter. Then Harriet amusingly instructs Rachel to specifically to take this dog to the animal shelter. Rachel is bummed, sarcastically asks, why does she get all the fun jobs? And then Rachel tells the dog, come on, boy. The dog does that defiant whine, puts his head down to the floor to let us know he doesn't want to go. Of course, the audience Oh, are you buying this as well? I think you might be.
If a dog were to do that in front of me, I'm giving this dog whatever. Like, I could have like a full meal and I'd be like, just take my plate. Just take it, because that's too cute.
I'm your servant, oh grand pup. I'm your servant.
The dog knows all.
Grandmaster pup. Rachel, very much a sucker for the dog's cuteness, when she tells Harriet she can't take him to the pound because look at his little face. And, you know, technically big face. But also, I looked up, I was trying to find out if a shelter and a pound were the same thing. They actually kind of are. I mean, they Google refers to pounds as basically municipal animal shelters.
I've always wondered what the difference was, because I've always heard people say shelter and pound. I'm like, what is the difference? I don't know.
So I thought that, like, when someone tells me an animal shelter, it just seems like a more heartwarming, like, proper paperwork process home thing. Like, oh, hey, like, I don't know, someone gave up this dog to us and we're going to, you know, groom him and, you know, this and that. We're going to make him feel at home until he finds his forever home. Like, just that kind of thing. When someone says a pound, there's just something about the word pound where it's like, ah, you know, we found this dog on the corner and we're just going to throw him in a cage and throw him in a in this sort of backyard barn hut and let him eat nasty expired canned food until someone maybe claims him.
That's what it kind of sounds like to me. Like, oh, you're going to the pound. It's like you just get like this weird feeling. But someone says I'm going to shelter, it's like, ooh la la, the shelter.
Yeah, I feel like a warm blanket when you say shelter to me. It's just wonderfully, it's wonderfully endearing.
It is, it is. And then when I heard that there's no kill shelters, I was like, okay, this must be like the Ritz-Carlton for dogs.
Mm-hmm. And then Rachel gives some more baby talk to the dog. Yes, you are cute. Before standing up and asking Harriet with a pleady, sad, childlike face if they can keep the dog. And then, like the unnatural sitcom family they are, Rachel and the kids, they all say to Harriet at the same time, please.
That's such a corny moment.
Oh, God. But we love it. That's the Winslows. We got to love them. And then Harriet concedes and says she'll talk to Carl when he gets home. The rest of the family rejoices at the news, as if Harriet made a final decision when she really didn't. And as Laura gleefully hugs her, Harriet exclaims, wait. Now it won't be easy, because, you know, Carl has a thing about pets. We then hear Carl exclaim from what I think is the living room, Harriet, I'm home. Will now, oh, I noticed is that this might be the first time, because remember, I think it was last episode I said that Carl always enters coming home from work where the scene currently is. And this time he's actually entering from a different room.
He is. This is in my notes. This is the first time we have ever had this happen.
And then everyone gets in a panic. Harriet urges Laura and Judy to get the dog upstairs. And I mean, if they're having that kind of reaction to Carl, like possibly discovering a dog, I mean, that should probably tell you something that this might not go well. Like, why did you even bring the dog in the house in the first place?
Yeah, this just seems like a mistake on everybody's part from the very beginning. We should have just had this dog outside and said, Carl, hey, this is what we found. It was instead of having him in the house.
And then the kids hurry upstairs with the dog, Rachel right behind them with Richie, before Harriet exclaims, Rachel, where are you going? Stay, sit. Like, she's literally talking to Rachel like she's a dog. Rachel, of course, gives an amusing frown, like a sad mopey dog would, to Harriet's command, as if she's a child who was also like told to eat her vegetables. I love this face acting from Tella Hopkins. She knows how to fact. I don't even call it face acting anymore. I call it facting.
Ooh, facting. I like that.
Yeah, I think I got that from Pod Meets World, the Boy Meets World podcast. And then I also was like, oh, Rachel, you're like a grown-ass woman scared of your goofball brother-in-law. Like, it kind of gave me parallels to the body damage episode, where Rachel was just like, oh, Harriet, I'm going to cause trouble with Carl's parade police car, but you take the responsibility. I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to face Carl's wrath.
Rachel's the younger sister. She knows what she's doing. She's like, oh, my older sister's going to take care of this, so I'm just going to stand in the background.
So Harriet tells Rachel she's not breaking the news to Carl alone. And speaking of which, we see Carl entering from the swinging door with a frowny face, body posture, and that also matches the frowny face. And he exclaims he's had the worst day of his entire life. And I was like, wow, not only Carl is entering from somewhere other than where the scene currently is, but I think this might be the first time where I see him coming home from work in a bad mood.
It's his first time having a bad day, which is surprising.
Authentic Chicago police officer post-workday mood. Finally, the Family Matters writers are realistic.
Yes, he had a bad day, and now we get to see what Carl's like in a bad mood after work.
And then also, for once, Carl gets to, did you also notice he got the chance to explain stay away? When because I think we had like this funny pattern the last few episodes where it's like, oh my God, I had the best day ever. You wouldn't believe my day. But then we get so much sidetracking of family activity before Carl finally talks about what happened, maybe at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. We finally get a moment where it's like, oh, we get to hear his day without a pause.
I know, groundbreaking. Oh, yeah. Of course, we hear what us as the audience is amused by. Like, Carl was in a high-speed car chase, and he ran out of gas.
That is hilarious. And now I want to know how often that happens.
Right? But I was also thinking, like, Carl, like, that is a you problem, my guy. Like, I just feel like, load up that gas tank in advance. Keep track of it if you're in for a long ride. Like, you probably could have controlled that.
Yeah, Carl could have. You know how much gas is in your car always, especially as a police officer. You know.
I mean, even not as a police officer, me, I have my dashboard in my Toyota Corolla. Like, it's always set to where I see the mileage and I see it counting down. So I know exactly, okay, this is how many miles it takes for me to get to work or to get to this place. And add that up with how many miles I have left in my tank. All right, I maybe have one more drive before I have to get gas. Like, maybe in 1989, like the mileage thing on the dashboard, that probably wasn't a thing. But, you know, nowadays, especially, like, if you are running out of gas and you didn't know ahead of time, what's your problem?
Yeah, it's a choice. I mean, I didn't know that my car did that mileage thing until about 2 weeks ago, because I had never touched the buttons on the dashboard. So I was like, oh, I don't know what this is. And then I hit it and I was like, I can see how many miles I have in my tank. I didn't know that was a thing.
It's a game changer, because if you're an anxious person like me, you think that, oh my God, my gas meter line is at the space before E. So that means I'm going to run out of gas like literally 2 seconds. But no, oftentimes when it gets to that point, you look at the mileage and it's like, oh no, you have like another 24, 25 miles. So yeah, when you see your exact mileage, that is going to change everything. And you're going to be able to go on about your day breathing.
See, now I'm that person. I refill my tank as soon as I get a quarter of the tank gone. I'm like, no, I need to go to a gas station now, because I was just always that person. I'm like, I'll just be driving and not think about it. And then boom, run out of gas.
I get it. I used to be like that. And then we see Rachel understandably trying to hold back her laughter at Carl's little high-speed car chase predicament. Carl is like to Harry and Rachel, like, hey, do you know how embarrassing this situation is? And to top it off, Carl comes home. He almost hits Edward's bicycle because he left it in the driveway again. Oh, dumb Eddie. Put your bike in the garage, the porch, the basement, not in the driveway. That's like disaster waiting to happen.
Yes, somewhere else, Eddie. Figure it out. Your bike should not be in the driveway.
Harriet apologizes to Carl in sympathy for his bad day, and Carl insists he's going to have a talk with Eddie about the bike. He asks if Eddie is in his room, and we see Rachel give a panicked look to what could happen. But Harriet cries out to Carl to stall. No. I don't know. I mean, yes. But you're too tired. I'll get him for you. Harriet then cries out to upstairs, Edward, come down here now. Eddie cries back to Harriet that he'll be right there. Then suddenly we also hear Eddie cry out loud, No, don't drink that out of the toilet. And then some, of course, we have some cackling in the audience from that line. I don't know if you picked up on that.
I did. It was hilarious.
But also, I was like to Eddie, like, dude, You probably could have exclaimed this line to the dog in a way where the family didn't have to hear it downstairs. You could lower your volume. You didn't have to be that loud.
Eddie's a loud talker. He does not have volume control. I have noticed that Eddie speaks very loud in every line he delivers.
Gee, I wonder if he's Black. I don't know. I wonder if that's a thing in the Black community when we talk too loud all the time.
For everything. There is no hiding anything in the house.
And Carl understandably looks confused and asks what is going on up there. Harriet lies and says it's Judy and she has not been herself lately since her hair had been braided tight. And even though I've never had braids, I am visually just trying to put myself in the place of Judy. Like, having tight-ass braids, I feel like it could, like, mush with your brain and give you a headache.
I've seen people and their heads red, headaches and everything, having migraines from getting braids. So I wouldn't doubt it. But I am a little mad at the writers here. Y'all could have gave Judy a line to say something that would have made that whole segment even funnier.
What line would have you suggested?
I have no suggestion on the line. We should have just got something from Judy, like a scream, a yell, something that would have made it hilarious.
Oh my God, the grease and the tightness of my head. What's going on? A still confused Carl pauses for a second before moving on and saying he's going to go watch. And then Carl pauses to look at Harriet like she's a weirdo as he's actually processing the odd thing that she just said about the Judy braid type thing. Carl then goes back to what he was going to say. He's going to watch the news and see if anybody has had a worse day than he did. And he'll just talk to Edward later. And I was like, Carl, it's the news. It's always going to be worse than what your day is.
Will be. It's always worse. The news is terrible.
And also, I feel like, isn't there a reference in both the Family Matters theme song and the Full House theme song where it's like, oh, what happened to the days where you read something good on the newspaper? Like, there, I know there's something like that in the opening line of the Jesse Frederick Family Matters theme song as days go by. Like, we have to go back to it because I've not been paying attention to the theme song for like the longest time now.
What did they say? It's a rare condition this day and age to read any good news on the newspaper page. That's what it is. Now, I don't know the Full House opening, but I do feel like that they have something very similar.
So it's also Jesse Frederick performing that song. And he was like, what happened to the milkman, the paper boy, the TV? Like, he sounded like a fucking Bob Dylan knockoff. It was odd, but I remember something about like the milkman. What happened to the days of the milkman?
Jim Crow. I don't understand.
As Carl walks past Harriet and Rachel toward the living room, he stops and looks back at Harriet with suspicious confusion before continuing to walk. After Carl exits, Harriet puts her shoulder down in slight relief as Rachel asks her what she's going to tell Carl about the dog. Harriet claims she's going to wait until Carl is in a good mood. Rachel sighs and asks, when is that going to be? Harriet ponders out loud that Carl has 8 years until retirement, so she'll just tell him at the party. And then the music fades out into the next scene. Oh my God. All right. I mean, yeah, that because that retirement party is clearly around the corner. It's definitely not in the year 2045. Well, not even 2045. I mean, at this point, 1989, maybe Carl would retire sometime in the 2000s, possibly.
Yeah, maybe the 2000s he would retire. I mean, 8 years. That's not bad for what he's been doing. I wouldn't be mad at retiring early 2000s.
So I'm so bad at math. I totally forgot about the 8 years part. So literally 8 years from 1989 would be 1997. So there you go.
So yeah, he would have had a good time to retire. And they could have kept the dog secret that long. Could you imagine walking into your retirement party and they're like, yeah, this is the dog that we've had for 8 years and you didn't know, but he's here.
And maybe he might pass away soon because, you know, dogs don't unfortunately live that long. But hey, there you go. Here's Mickey. Yeah. We go to scene two. Exterior night shot of Winslow House. The camera zooms in on that top center tiny window of the house. Cut to Eddie's room. And it looks almost exactly like it did from the Straight A's episode with the giant Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls poster. Eddie standing over Laura and Judy as they're seated on the bed with the dog. And then within a short period of time from the last scene to this one, I guess Eddie decided it was just time to change because I think he wore something different in the last scene. This time around, he has like this animated cartoonish design t-shirt tucked into black pants. Was this part of your like whole thing about like Eddie's questionable fashion choices?
No, this was the cutest outfit Eddie's worn in any episode. I personally love this t-shirt. I love the jeans that go with it. It is weird to tuck in a t-shirt, but that's just our fashion these days. But it looks good on him.
These days, I definitely remember it being a big thing back in the 90s. But like in the 2020s, people are still tucking in their t-shirts.
I've never seen anybody tuck their t-shirt in the 2020s.
I mean, even me growing up in the 90s and 2000s, I was just like, that is a choice. I was told to tuck in my collared button down with my suit and everything. But once I have a t-shirt, it's like, nope, that is all out in the open.
See, I came from the era we had to tuck it in. We had creases in our pants. We had to iron creases into our pants. So once I finally got to let loose at a little club and wear a button down, not tucked in, I thought I was a rebel.
All right. I bet you were. And knock on the door. we hear a knock on the door. Eddie asks who it is. And Rachel whispers that it is she. Eddie opens the door. And Rachel excitingly comes into to show the gifts she bought for the dog that she has now decided to name Mickey. Rachel has got him on a leash. Never mind. Rachel has got as gifts a leash, food dish, water bowl, Doggy Delights. And I Googled Doggy Delights to see if that was an actual thing. And it seems like 100 million different dog people use Doggy Delights as like a way to identify their dog treats. So I guess it's like a public domain thing.
And that's what I'm thinking, because I was looking up Doggy Delights too, because I wanted to know, like, are these treats that we can still get today? And I didn't get anything specific. It was all very generic.
And then Rachel exclaims that Mickey is going to love these treats as she opens them from a bag to give him some. And I was looking at the layout of these treats, the way they're wrapped. I was like, oh, those look like they could be like Hershey Kisses or something.
They kind of did look like little chocolate candies.
And then Mickey is not accepting the treat Rachel is giving him. Rachel finds that to be strange because, as the label says, dogs eat them like candy. So we're not the only ones that think it looks like human candy. Rachel shrugs the treats away. We hear another knock at the door. Eddie nervously asks who it is. Carl cries out, Dad. And then we hear an immediate gasp from either Rachel or the kids. Eddie has an amusing, dumb moment when he asks, Dad, who?
Eddie knew what he was doing. He was smart.
Dad Robertson, Dad Thompson, Dad Jefferson. There's so many guys with first names of Dad.
Mm-hmm. There's so many dads. It could be Dad, Uncle Phil. That wouldn't work, but it could be that.
Yeah, Dad Phil or Father Phil hits different than Uncle Phil.
It does. It doesn't sound right. It comes off the tongue very wrong.
So Carl is not having it. He simply tells Edward to let him in. Eddie cries out nervously, just a second, Dad. I'll be right with you. And then Rachel, Laura, and Judy quickly move to hide Mickey and Eddie's small but apparently roomy closet, where like the door frame on the outside is like 2 feet tall for some reason. Why is the closet made for a very small person when Eddie is clearly the opposite of that?
I'm still trying to figure this out, because I'm still trying to understand, is Eddie still in the attic? Is this supposed to be the attic and they've just kept adding things to it? Like, I am so confused.
That's a very good point, because that is the kind of short person's closet that you would see in an attic. So It could be, yeah, it could be that in the pilot episode, it was this bland attic that Eddie just moved into and then he just dressed it up over time. So maybe the continuity issue that we thought there was between Eddie and Mama Winslow and what room they're staying in.
Very true. Very true. Maybe we were wrong, or maybe Eddie's just using Mama Winslow's room while she's out of town with the girls.
Rachel and the kids put themselves back to where they were and try to act casually as Carl walks in. Carl is confused by Rachel, Judy, and Laura's presence and asks, what are they doing here? Rachel claims that they're just hanging out. They're listening to music. Carl says he doesn't hear any music. Rachel thinks of another excuse for a millisecond before claiming they make their own music. And then suddenly her and the kids, they break out into the improvised, wacky choreography as Rachel sings My Prerogative from Bobby Brown. Eddie, of course, makes it even better by being on backup vocals. Second episode in the row, we got a full-on Bobby Brown reference. I mean, you would think that they're going to go through his entire fucking catalog in this first season.
Right. I'm hoping we get a cameo from Bobby Brown at some point, because they played so much of his music. And Judy stole the scene with her dance moves. She was amazing.
Now describe it, because I don't remember.
She gave us like a good old Bobby Brown two-step. And I was like, I like this.
Yeah, Judy is making the most of this episode. I will give her that. And Carl is confused by all this madness. And then Rachel and the kids eventually do a strong finish with their performance with those like hip hop arms crossed freeze poses. And then, of course, we get the polite applause from the audience, because I guess in this moment, they're just like, whoa, that family really knows how to choreograph and sing together, like a Brady Bunch, like a Black Brady Bunch sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Black Brady Bunch is what I got in my notes written down in big letters, because everyone was like cheering for them, like, ooh, they did that.
Love it. Yeah, the Black Brady Bunch, another Black Jacksons, if you will, without the Joe Jackson abuse.
Yes, without the abuse, which I also now have my prerogative number one on my save list for Spotify. So I'm going to be listening to that today.
I don't blame you. Bobby Brown, even though, you know, he eventually did not do so well later on. God, when he had those hits back in the day, they slapped. Every little step I take, my prerogative, that alone, his legacy is sealed.
It is. It is. I mean, you were in the Ghostbusters movie. Your legacy is sealed with me forever.
And then Carl asked concerningly if they all do this a lot. Rachel claims that they do. And they're thinking of going on Star Search with this insane, wacky Black Brady Bunch / Jackson's choreography. And what a relevant pop culture reference. Remember the show Star Search? I know it originally was hosted by Tonight Show sidekick Ed McMahon for, I think, what, like 12 years, like 83 to 95. And then actually the way I got introduced to Star Search, it wasn't until the remake with Arsenio Hall that lasted for like a year in the early 2000s. So I don't know if you remember either iteration of Star Search when you were growing up.
I remember them. Now, I never watched Star Search, but I remember them because I was more of a cartoon kid, but I do remember them, both the original and with Arsenio Hall.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much a precursor to America's Got Talent, you know what I mean? Like, oh, singers, dancers, I think like everybody who had talent was on that show, so that was something. Carl just accepts that he won't know what's going on and moves on to apologize to Eddie about blowing up at dinner about the bike because he had a real bad day. Eddie tells his dad it's okay, and then Carl proclaims that he guesses he'll just turn in early for the night. Rachel, Laura, and Judy in sync wish their dad a good night in the most forced charismatic way possible. And then Carl notices what I think are the doggy treats on top of Eddie's, I believe, what is that? Is that Eddie's very short dresser? Like, so he has a short closet and a short dresser too?
It's like his little mini dresser. He's a Polly Pocket.
I think the Winslow family just went cheap on him. I think that this is the stuff from when he was like 5 years old and they're just like, hey, times are tough, Eddie. So have the same five-year-old furniture when you're like fucking 16 and you're like 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. They never moved it out of the attic. So they're just like, Eddie, it's up there. Just use it.
That wraps up part one. Four Man's Best Friend. Join us for part two.